This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome everyone to yet another episode of Diagnosing Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonsland. Remember, Danny, don't be obsessed with your desires, Danny. Remember, the Zen philosopher Basha once wrote, "A flute with no holes is no flute. A donut with no hole is a Danish." That and more after a word from our sponsors, Pico Technology and Autel. Are you chasing elusive automotive problems? Pico Technology empowers you to see what's really happening. Pinpoint faults in sensors, wiring, and components with unmatched accuracy. Picoscope oscilloscopes transform your diagnostic capabilities. Visit PicoAuto.com, that's PicoAuto.com, and revolutionize your diagnostics today. Autel delivers award-winning automotive diagnostic tools trusted by technicians across North America. Backed by Autel North America experts in sales, training, and technical support. From drivability diagnostics and TPMS service to ADAS and advanced safety systems, Autel helps technicians follow OEM procedures and repair with confidence. Learn more at Autel.com. I'm going to start off with just kind of left field, but I think I have a reason. Mostly as a good example, I think life in general. I guess the reason I'm going to bring this up is because it's when I thought of it. And that's yesterday. I went golfing with my wife and a mutual friend, and I would not say I'm an avid golfer. I like it. I like the challenge. I've played, I don't know, off and on since middle school-ish. The reason I got to play that much early on was I was not on the school team. Probably wouldn't have joined the team. Maybe a mistake, but I didn't. I wouldn't have thought of it. One of the larger local golf courses had Massey Ferguson equipment and used John's Wood Husqvarna and steel chainsaws, brush cutters, blowers, right? So they were at my grandparents' implement dealer for a lot of stuff. We did a fair bit of work for them. Because of that, as you may have guessed, we got a little bit of special treatment, and many times we could go golf for heavily discounted greens fees and cart fees and all of that. So that's how I got to go early on and up through high school. And then a friend of mine worked at a golf course, and one of the perks there was you get to go golfing for free. So then we would just split costs and worked out quite well. I would never consider myself that good. I'm better this year than I was last year, but not to go into some big story about it. It's just something my wife has enjoyed since I guess she was a little out of high school. Something I get a kick out of. We get to go do it together for a couple hours outside, stuff like that. And you could be competing against each other, but ultimately you end up competing against yourself. So there's that. The reason I bring it up, I thought of it yesterday because we're out golfing and I'm kind of, for me, right? So I have to be very, very transparent about that. For me, as golfing quite well, first couple holes not so great, but I don't know, stuff kind of started clicking a little bit, and by that means I'm giving myself chances to par, but I'm really bogeying most of the time. For 9 holes, I think the par was 35, could have been 36, but I end up with a 43. For me, that's a stellar score. Some of you are laughing. I don't blame you. But for me, that was a terrific score. But what made me think of this, talking about this and relating it to other things, is that I had one par. I had a couple of bogeys that really I should be happy with. Really happy with, because at my, just say the word handicap, that's what it is, but I don't know my handicap. I don't put that much effort into it. But for my skill level, bogey for me is the same as a par, or maybe even better, maybe even a birdie on some holes, depending on difficulty. I should be ecstatic. Maybe not doing victory laps around the green, but I should be happy. But I don't do that. I look at it and I'm like, ah, man, I totally screwed up that second shot. I totally screwed up that chip shot, or that was a makeable putt, and I didn't leave myself a gimme afterwards. It just shredding it apart. In the back of my head, I know it was pretty good. Even the holes that I parred, like I knew they were, that was really good. And I should have been really, really happy, but I catch myself dissecting it. Turns out there might be some psychological terms involved with this. One is discounting the positive. I thought it might be like imposter syndrome, but that's kind of different. There might be some similarities in there, but it's really not the same. Discounting the positive and then counterfactual thinking. They're somewhat the same. Not exactly. But one, basically, they're cognitive biases, and a loose term might be hindsight bias. With my skill set, with my ability, with my club quality and experience, like we don't golf once a week, maybe sometimes twice a week, but again, not avid, not out in the yard practicing and not taking lessons and all the things. So what happens is I score a, bogey, which is one over par, and I'm looking at what if I would have only, if I would have done this, and then I discount it. I take away some of that positive. Like I should be at least maybe a little spring in my step. Don't do it. I'm positive that I've learned this from this behavior, this thought process from my maternal grandparents and my mom. They downplay it a lot, masked as modesty. I think there's reasons for that. I get it. But I bought into it heavy. Sometimes I go over the board with it more for, I hate to say comedic effect. Like I do try to get a little bit of a laugh sometimes. The other thing is like, I don't like the idea of projecting arrogance. There's a big difference between confidence and arrogance. I get that, but I just don't want to be that guy. I just don't. So I do that, but I need to be able to have it in the back of my head. Like that was pretty good. If you keep doing this, if you keep practice, maybe if you sign up for some lessons, maybe if you upgrade your clubs or grips or something like that, you're going to get better and better. But for that, where you're at right now, that was a heck of a hole, right? That was a heck of a round or half a round. So yeah, big wow. Matt's golf game, Matt's golf outing, big deal. But it translates right to the bays. How many times have you had a vehicle in, and as a technical specialist, you spend 2 hours trying to find an intermittent short that pops a fuse? And depending on what it is, where it is, 2 hours is actually really good. But now that you know where the problem was and how you found it, you start really discounting the accomplishment, because now it's like, oh my God, that was so easy. It was so obvious. If I would have just this, if I would have just that, if I would have, oh my God, I had this one special tool. If I would have just got that right away, or if I would have set my meter up for the beep to make a sound, oh, it would have saved me some time, or had longer leads on my headlight or test light or whatever, so that I could have seen it while I was back there. I probably would have seen it flickering, and I could have shaved 15 minutes, 30 minutes off of this. That's essentially the same thing. One, considering what you knew at the time, most important, that you couldn't have known. You don't know where the problem is. There's a whole bunch of variables you're trying to balance out. And I put myself very much in this group. Very much. I'm right there with you. Why can't you go like, that was pretty good, and next time I might get this tool out sooner. I might, I need to manufacture some leads for my test lights, whatever they are. Test, a regular incandescent, 3157, 194 bulb, whatever you're using, or a meter that emits a sound, something like that. You set up your scopes, right? Pico, we can set it up to do some pretty cool stuff to alert you of certain phenomenon, like current exceeding a certain amount or vice versa. just, there's so many things. Why can't both things be true? Why couldn't what I did? That was a good find. Yeah. Considering what you knew, considering what you did, you didn't make any gross errors, big screw ups. You didn't go on a big wild goose chase or anything like that. You didn't go spiraling down a rabbit hole. 2 hours isn't too bad. Next time, armed with this knowledge, I might be able to shave some time off in this exact type of a scenario, right? If it's totally exact, then what are you going to say? You should have just went right to the problem. I suppose if you see it a few times, right, then it's no different than a bulletin instructing you to go look at a certain area because it's a known problem. Fine. Or, you know, a mechanical specialist pulling that transmission out, following the procedure step by step, and then realizing I didn't have to take that out. I didn't have to take that out. Or if I would have removed this, if I would have removed that, I could have got this stuff all out of my way. This would have been wide open. So now doing something at the book time or a little bit less doesn't seem like such an accomplishment. You start discounting that because now armed with this knowledge I didn't have before, I could have saved time. I could have done it faster yet. I think we got to be careful with that. Like, we can be okay with what we did. We can be, you know, happy with the results or, you know, what we did, be able to learn, right? And just get better at it and use these new ideas the next time around and find out if they work. I don't think we have to run ourselves into the ground, and we sure as heck don't need to run someone else down. I think that I've seen that happen. Luckily, not in our shop. If we did, it was a long, long, long time ago. But I know other repair shops that do it, where now that others know the result, what was found, why did that take 2 hours? Why did that take? You should have been able to do that well under book time. It just cutting people down. And not considering if you're in their shoes, knowing what they knew or didn't know at that time, would you have done it so much faster? Are you sure about that? Or would you have found it that much faster? I don't think so, right? You know, hypothetical bias, a lot of biases, right? There's so many biases out there. Cognitive biases, egocentric bias, and cognitive biases are just, we have so many of them. And I think just being aware of them, I know I've talked about biases quite a bit. I probably will continue to do so because there's so many of them and they rear their heads everywhere on regardless of where you're at, you know, be it socioeconomically or in life or which side of the counter you're on or which end of the shop you're on, you know, front of house, back of house. Are you the entry level tech or are you the master tech, right? As quote unquote experts, we kind of have a nasty, nasty habit of kind of an expert bias, the curse of knowledge. And I don't mean like Thanos, right? Where you just got to do these deeds for the good of everyone else. I mean more so when we figure something out, I shouldn't even say we. Yeah. When experts figure something out, a lot of times they put the pieces together, they figure, now it makes sense. And it's that hindsight bias again. And really upward, why? You know, if I look at it, it's going to suck. Dude, Matt, that upward counterfactual thinking, right? It's just almost rewriting reality. And kind of have to just knock it off. Cut ourselves some slack. Knowing what I knew, not bad. First time I've ever seen anything like that or worked on anything like that. I'll do better next time. I can do better. I'm going to take this. I'm going to learn from it, a lot of benefit from it. And then maybe in the back of your head, just a little bit of a pat on the back, like done good. Attaboy.
Electric and hybrid vehicles are here. And with them, a new era of diagnostics. Don't get left behind. Pico Technologies EV diagnostic kits are your all-in-one solution to safely and efficiently service any electric or hybrid vehicle. From comprehensive high-voltage system analysis and insulation testing to guided step-by-step procedures, Pico puts the power of confident repairs right at your fingertips. Future-proof your shop, boost your efficiency, and become the go-to expert for the next generation of cars. Visit PicoAuto.com today. That's PicoAuto.com.
This episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z is brought to you by Autel. Autel is a global developer and manufacturer of award-winning professional automotive diagnostic tools and service equipment, trusted by technicians, educators, and shop owners across North America. With diagnostics at their core, Autel's real-world solutions support repair workflows ranging from full-system vehicle diagnostics to servicing the most advanced automotive technologies. What sets Autel North America apart is the team behind the tools. Dedicated experts across sales, training, and technical support, each bringing deep, hands-on experience supporting professional technicians. When questions arise, you're working with people who understand the vehicles, the procedures, and the real-world demands of modern repair. Whether diagnosing complex drivability concerns, servicing TPMS systems, validating repairs, or working with ADAS and advanced safety technologies, Autel tools are engineered to support accurate, efficient repairs in strict accordance with OEM procedures and standards. To learn more about Autel and their diagnostic solutions, visit autel.com, AUTEL.com. So yeah, I'm going to probably try to start in places outside of the shop to cut myself a little slack, to be a little more honest about an accomplishment. You're probably not going to see me celebrate. Not my thing. But maybe crack a smile, or I don't know, just at least be able to tell myself, hey, that was pretty darn good. Even if it's a double bogey on a par, really hard par four, or par five, or even a par three, I guess it doesn't matter what the hole is. If it's hard and difficult, I hit a couple of really good shots. And even if my other shots weren't just so bad, but they're just slightly bad enough to make those next ones difficult to be able to get the lower score, be able to just be honest, right? If there's any running theme to this, I should probably rename the podcast something about honesty because I bring it up so much. But yeah, can I just be on the level with myself and go, that wasn't bad? You beat yourself up as much as you like. That wasn't all that bad. Try to carry that over into work, where I am my biggest critic, bar none. And it's been that way for a long time. Luckily, I have worked for people that know that. And if I do really make a mistake or really feel like I made a mistake, they don't say anything. They don't have to. They already know I'm being way harder on myself than they will be. In some cases, they almost have to try to pull me back a little bit. So I think many of you are like that. Can we use some of that? Like, I feel like that's helped me get better at what I do, but can I make it less negative? Right? Can it be very much like early episodes I've done with Margaret? I did a bad thing. I'm not a bad person. Can I take, you know, twist that a little bit and be less, I suck, I took a wrong turn? And then, of course, don't just, I'm not saying forget about it. Use that for the next one and the next one and keep improving the same way, hopefully, maybe even more, because you're just not running yourself down. That's something I know I've been extraordinarily good or bad at. Good at doing it, bad that I do it. Just run myself into the ground about it. Because I just want to make sure I don't screw up again. So I would also like to thank you guys for the messages. And it turns out I'm probably going to have to do more Mount Rushmore type episodes, or at least sprinkle in some Rushmore stuff into the regular podcast episodes. Like right now, I guess I've been getting a few on basketball because of the NBA playoffs. I'm not an avid watcher. I watch highlights. Honestly, I thought OKC was just a shoe-in to win at all. I really did. I just did not see anybody stopping that juggernaut. And Wemby and the San Antonio Spurs did just that. Took them seven games, but they did it. If you're not a basketball fan, you might want to check out some highlights. Because one, the games, some of them were blowouts, but some of those games were as good a game as you will ever see. Two, Wemby is special. I don't know if his body will allow him to play a long career. So if you get a chance to watch him, I think it's worth a few minutes to check it out, even if you're not a big fan. Yeah, questions of like, you know, who are my top four or starting five and all time. I don't know how you answer these things. You know, I just don't. Do you punish people for time? So, yeah, I don't know. You're going to have Jordan on there. How do you dislike him for whatever reasons? How do you not have LeBron on there? He is that good. He is. So those are two shoe-ins. And then after that, it just kind of gets rough for me. I feel like I almost need to put Larry Bird on there. The reason is I don't know any professional athlete, namely basketball, that somebody gets the ball or doesn't. I mean, before the play starts, they're walking out of a timeout. I've never heard of someone trash talking where they tell everyone on the other team what play is going to be run, where they're going to get the ball, where they're going to shoot it, how much time they're going to leave on the clock. And oh, by the way, there's nothing you're going to do about it. And then go do it. What? It's just most other trash talk is telling them each other their mom, something about their moms, or you can't guard me or stuff like that. And this dude, Larry Bird, comes out of timeouts, tells everyone on the other team, I'm going to get the ball right here. I'm going to dribble over here. I'm going to give you something, which is basically I'm going to pump fake or I'm going to do something. And then I'm going to shoot it in your face. And he does it. And he didn't do it like once. Like this is time and time and time again. That blows my mind, right? Walking up to somebody during shoot around at the beginning of the game or halftime warmups and basically saying, hey, I got you a Christmas present. I'm going to give it to you early. And then they're sitting on the bench for resting. It could be a starter getting the ball near that team's bench, the opposing team's bench, and say, hey, shoot the ball and Merry Christmas. And then it goes in. Like, yeah, he's got to be on there. Like, what the heck? Center, I struggle. You know, in a few years, it might be Wemby. I don't know. Again, are we punishing Wilt Chamberlain for when he was around? Because in today's game, if we just pluck him out of his timeline and stick him in ours, he's not going to be as skilled. Athletically, he's probably as gifted as any player has ever been. Size, speed, agility. He was a freak of nature. Shaq is dominant as anyone, but I just got this thing for Hakeem Olajuwon, nicknamed the Dream. He was selected in the draft number one over Michael Jordan. It was Hakeem Olajuwon, Sam Bowie, Michael Jordan in that order. Sam Bowie ran into injuries, never got to really find out how good he was. I don't think he was going to be Michael Jordan. Nobody ever faulted Houston for taking Olajuwon over Jordan. That about sums it all up, don't it? He's in the top 10 in the league in scoring, rebounds, blocks, and steals as a center, 7 foot. I don't think he was actually 7 feet. It's more like 6'10", but again, just an athletic freak. So that leaves one left. Point guard. I'm so torn. Magic, Stockton. Magic, there's like phases of him. There's different phases. There's the earlier, you know, rookie Magic who is a little more athletic, would get steals, terrible shooter, just terrible. There's the version where he worked on his jump shot and he was pretty good, but he slowed down a bit. So he's more of a defensive liability. Right? 6'9", point guard, more like 6'8". Still, at the time especially, that's huge for a point guard. Stockton, he's more like 6'1", 6'2", better shooter. I mean, honestly, you couldn't go wrong with either one. I mean, let's be real. I mean, we got to see it with Dream Team, right? 92. But Larry's back was absolutely destroyed. He had come out of retirement. Magic kind of was coming out of retirement with the HIV diagnosis. So they're not like what they were. and Jordan was kind of like at the height of his powers. You can't go wrong with either one. Having Magic and Larry and Jordan on the same team is just too appealing. But I honestly don't have a problem with making it Stockton either. So we'll just go with Magic. There's the starting five. Jordan and Magic in the backcourt. Larry Bird and LeBron. And Hakeem in the front court. There you go. Good timing for this time of year, eh? Yeah. I hope you got a kick out of this episode. And please keep hitting me with the messages. If you have more ideas for content, let me know. Especially like the technical stuff. Like, what would you like to hear that's more to do with technical? Be it tools and equipment or testing or problems or system theory and operation. I would really appreciate it. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at mattfonzelpodcast@gmail.com or you can Facebook message me, no problem. Yeah. Thank you again for listening. Thank you to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.